Okay, so we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance brought to us tonight by Lynette. Okay. All you have to do is just say I, and everybody will follow in allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Someday.
Soon.
That was good. You got it good.
But doesn't that make one feel powerful?
No.
Okay, roll call, please.
Good evening, commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Commissioner Marlene Hurd.
Present.
Commissioner Greg Hartwig.
Present.
Commissioner Tanya Pitts.
Excused.
Commissioner Moses Main.
Present.
Commissioner Barbara Montgomery.
Present.
Commissioner Janet Castillo.
She's excused.
And Commissioner Adi Negrange.
Present.
Thank you.
Approval of the minutes from our last meeting.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none. Passes unanimously. Old or unfinished business?
There is none, Chair.
There is none. We have done a fine job. Modifications to the agenda. Does anyone have any modifications? Hearing none, we are moving on to new business, item A.
Good evening, Commissioners. Item A is consideration of a resolution authorizing an amendment to a previously approved permanent loan commitment to Village Side Housing Partners, LP, including an amendment to a security agreement with Bank of America for the partial financing of Lion Creek Crossings Phase 4. In the amount of $7,527,592 in CAHI funds, and authorizing the developer fee and security agreement with Village Side Housing Partners developers. This item is to extend what is currently in place. I would like to report that the CAHI board met this morning at 10 o'clock and approved the extension of the loan, and this is being passed on to you. I would like, however, to call Phil Neville up, if I can, to answer your questions, but also just to give us an overview of where we are on our two phases, because they're linked now. This is extending the commitment through phase 5, just in case, in the unlikely event that the transit-oriented development funding were to be foreclosed upon, and that would put phase 4, which is going to close in the next month or so, into some jeopardy. And so I think it's really important just to understand where we are on those two projects, and then we can take your questions. Bill?
Thank you, Eric. Again, I'm Phil Neville. I'm here to report on Lion Creek Crossings, and we have in the audience today several representatives who work with us on this project. We have our partners, Enner Chu from Ybald Sea and Lydia Tan from Related, and behind them, Steve Hoppe, who our in-house project manager, who is sitting with Michelle Brewer, our legal counsel for this phase. Very briefly, you made a loan, a backup loan available using CAHI money for this project 2 years ago, December 14th. The backup loan is expiring, and because we are late getting the project in the ground, we need you to extend that backstop. We also want to alert you that the terms of that backstop loan are being modified. As you recall, we had $7.5 million approximately deposited with Union Bank, our bank, but it's pledged to go to Bank of America under certain circumstances. You also heard at a number of meetings in the last year that the state had been willing to extend our time frame to get full entitlements and all monies committed for phase 5. And they did. It took a while, but they did agree to that. We also had heard that the state was going to disconnect phase 4 from phase 5, which was an important thing to us. The state was unable to get that done. So we still have a connection, a dotted line connection between these two phases. So the backstop loan was being made until the loan commitment was originally being made until we had done our permanent closing on phase four. So you do a construction closing, you build the project, you move the families in, you do your cost certification, file your 8609 with form with TCAC, the Tax Credit Allocation Committee. And once you've gotten all that done, you get your, you do your permanent closing, and the last of the investors' money comes into the project. So we expect that this will happen either this month or, if not, in January. We're still trying to get the permanent closing of phase four done, which would bring in the state's money of $7.5 million for the project, and then we would go on. However, there is still that dotted line connection with phase five. Well, phase five probably won't be in the ground until next summer. The plan for phase five is to go into CIDLAC to get the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, get the bond allocation, and get the 4% tax credits that go so well with that program, and have a construction closing for phase five. That's the senior phase, as opposed to the phase four we've already built. We'd have that closing, construction closing by June. So once we're in the ground, our deal is that if we close before the end of July, that we can have our money back. However, there's a new twist here that wasn't there before. There are certain circumstances under which we may have to continue to guarantee this development going forward, but they're kind of arcane, and they're based on the very small chance that we won't go forward. I say that because we're applying for bonds and 4% credits, and they're really non-competitive. There's some competition around bonds, but normally there isn't any early in the year. As long as you meet the requirements, you get the authority to issue bonds. And you, Moses particularly, would know how many times we've issued bonds with 4% credits over the years. We've done it on all of our Lion Creek Crossings phases to date, and we've done it on other projects as well, Harrison Senior being one next door, and Keller Plaza, and also Cathedral Gardens, which is now under construction. So the long and short of it is we're asking for your authority then to extend and modify the circumstances of this backstop loan. And we're open to any questions you may have for me or our partners or our attorney.
The only thing I was going to add is that I'm grateful that our partners are now committing 100% of their developer fee until this issue is resolved so we can get the shovels in the ground and move forward. And I was grateful for their willingness to step up to do that over the past couple of weeks. And I just want to recognize them and thank them for that.
Oh, and then, Mr. Johnson, one more quick thing. There is an error in our memo to you, a typo, at about two-thirds of the way down the second page, the paragraph that begins with Bank of America. We put down that the equity investment is $17 million. It's actually $11 million. So I apologize for not picking that up on the draft. You'll see on the back page that the actual figure of equity is about $11.6 million in our budget. So, again, my bad.
Yes, Commissioner Nagara.
Thank you, Phil. So I too wanted to echo the appreciation to Abalsi Interrelated for the pledging of developer fees. We all know that between developer fees and ongoing operations are the major way that nonprofit developers or developers kind of get cash. And so this is a really big deal that these organizations are pledging their fee. And it aligns all of our incentives to get this closed out and started. So, Phil, one of my questions was the risk factor. So it seems like for us the major risk point is to close financing on phase five. And I was trying to think of major risk factors that might delay that by July 31st, 2013. Major risk factors. You don't think financing is a real major risk factor, from what I understand. Is there anything else out there that gives you pause or you feel pretty good about that, hitting that milestone?
We feel that the risk is a little bit lower than it was when you first made this pledge 2 years ago, because we do have our entitlements and we have our financing for the fifth phase, which mm-hmm. we didn't have 2 years ago. And B of A still very strongly wants the deal to go forward. They're not interested in taking they've worked with us on the fact we haven't paid the construction loan back yet. The tax credit investment side still wants to do the investment. Our partners are very motivated, having their developer fee on the line. And we would like to build that fifth phase to complete our vision for the Coliseum Gardens Hope 6 project, which we started more than 10 years ago. So worked with our partners for that period of time. So yes, I think the risk is still there that we could become the permanent lender, which wouldn't be good for us because, you know, that's a residual receipts note. And you get only a certain amount of cash flow over the years. It takes a long time to get much of any money back when you're in that position.
Okay. I have a few questions. A second question is, so just looking through and reading through this history, the initial trigger was entitlements of phase 5 by 6/31/2012. The new trigger is close of financing by July 2013.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, we missed the 6/30/2012 deadline.
Well, let me explain that. I think in a conversation we had a week ago, we may have said that, but I believe we actually met that deadline. We had our full financing commitments, and I think, I'm going to look over my shoulder, we also had our entitlements by that date.
Okay.
But we couldn't go forward for other reasons related to the State Department of Housing and Community Development being unready. They weren't ready to amend our grant agreements to provide for things that we were still negotiating with them. For example, they were able to extend us beyond June 30th, but they weren't able to disconnect phase 4 and phase 5. And there's a grant that's parallel with this loan, this permanent loan they would make for phase 4. There's an infrastructure grant that's part of that state TOD Prop 1C Transit Area and Development award that we got. And both the grant and the loan are connected. So that's why we've raised the issue of being fearful of a clawback, and we had to work that out with all parties, and it took some months to figure out
So between July through now, those mm-hmm. were the negotiations that you were
right.
going through.
The state was actually ready to close the first part of November in terms of their closing team, but we hadn't gotten all these things
okay.
worked out.
Okay. And then lastly, if there was a HCD foreclosure, then AMI restrictions would be restricted to what? I assume HCD has the deepest restrictions, and so at that point it would be city money and tax credits?
Well, I've been advised by Michelle Brewer, who you can ask further of this, that the HCD restrictions would probably remain in place because there will be a permanent closing either this month or next, which will bind their restrictions to the project. So if for some reason we had to come in and pay and substitute our money for theirs,
yeah.
we'd have to ask them to take their restrictions away. They don't do it automatically.
Okay. Interesting. So they could foreclose, take them, and their money is not in the deal, but their restrictions stay on title.
Right. Unless we were able to convince them that we had all these other restrictions from the city and the housing authority and
yeah.
the tax credit project, and there was no need for them to stay aboard with their restrictions. But they're not easy to work with, so
no.
I don't know if I'd be optimistic.
Great. Well, this is so important and kind of complicated. So thank you, and thank the developers as well. It's impressive right. what you've been able to negotiate through with the state. So I would motion for approval, knowing that there are probably other questions.
Yes.
Second.
Commissioner Hurd.
And my question is to Ibasi, if you can come up, please. And the question is in relationship to the developer fee.
Yes.
And making sure that we keep the commitment to the community.
Right.
Building something that's safe and helping out our seniors. Could you talk about that?
Sure. I want to apologize first. My throat is a little bit is a little bit sore right now. So if anything I say doesn't come through clearly, please just ask me to repeat it. So the reason that we pledged our developer fee as part of the negotiations to move this forward was that we really wanted to demonstrate to OHA that our incentives were all aligned in order to get to a closing as quickly as possible. So your question was about our commitment to seniors and also...
And to the community.
And to the community. We are building a service program into phase five, which is our senior building. And we're still working through the staffing for that services program. But right now what we have is we've got an executed memorandum of understanding with Center for Elders Independence, or CEI, which is a program that provides PACE services to the building. So in phase five, what you're going to see is you're going to see an intake process when we do the lease up of the building that's going to be integrated with our services team. And when I say that, what I mean is that every person that becomes a resident at Lion Creek Phase 5, which is our senior building, is going to have an option to work with CEI to have all of their medical wraparound services provided for them by our partner, which is a registered PACE program. And PACE stands for the Program for All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, I think.
Okay. Great. I'm glad to hear that.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, so we have a motion. We have a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none. Carries unanimously. And I would also like to thank OHA for the fine effort on this as well, of getting everybody to, you know, the whole, all of the developers to come together and share the risk. And I mean, it really kind of feels like we really have a team here, and that's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, then item B, consent agenda.
Move the consent agenda.
We have a motion.
I can second.
Okay, and we have a second.
I second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Any abstentions? And carries unanimously.
Thank you, commissioners. It's going to be a short meeting.
Yes, it is.
But it was much needed for the last one, and I know Lydia's left the room, but I want to thank actually related Bill Witte for stepping up with me to get that last item resolved for us. And I will personally call him tomorrow. The in terms of the written reports, we have our usual written reports, and I've got a couple highlights I just want to call out that are timely. One is Holiday Splendor is September 13th. You've gotten emails about it. December.
Yeah, Eric, let's just make sure that there's no one that wants to...
I'm sorry.
We don't have any speaker cards.
We have no speaker cards.
I just want to make sure that we have confirmed that no one wants to speak. Okay, good. All right, good.
Sorry, so I jumped the agenda.
We're all free. Roll ahead.
Written communications. You have the usual reports. I want to just call out a couple things. One is Holiday Splendor, December 13th. And it's at the Asian Cultural Center on 9th. And please feel free to stop by if you can at all. It usually ends early. It doesn't go real late, so it's about 5 to over by 7:38 would be the usual time, right? Yeah. So if you can make it during those time at all, just pop in. We'd love to see you. It's going to be a lot of fun. Mrs. Bernstein told me, and this is I'm putting this on the record, that it was going to be the best Holiday Splendor ever, and that I was to call my former predecessors and let them know that. I didn't, although I invited both of them there. They're not able. They're not going to be in town. Harold Davis has another board he sits on that night, so I don't think we'll see him. The Harrison Senior opening is next door is December 19th. You have a flyer about that, so we're looking forward to that. It's going to be, I think, up in the courtyard, and it'll be the usual opening. I wanted just to do a party for the residents myself, but it'll be what it'll be, and maybe we'll have a little holiday celebration as a side. I wanted to also just call out a couple of people. Yeah.
Are we doing that, or is Christian Church Homes?
Christian Church Homes is the lead. We're assisting with Greer, making sure that folks are there and that we get, you know, the mayor. I think we've invited the mayor. Barbara Lee's office will be there, depending on whether she's in town or not. I'm not sure, because they're doing the, you know, fiscal cliff issues.
Sure.
But we've gotten involved in that, would be the answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. In terms of this past Thanksgiving, we helped 1,000 people eat Thanksgiving dinner at the Rainbow Rec. And by we, I mean both Force Account staff, volunteering, and OPO staff, and significantly our cadets who did the serving. And I just wanted to call them out and thank them for that service. They volunteered to show up on over Thanksgiving weekend to do that. And it was one of those things that really kind of touches the community in a way that we can't otherwise. I also wanted to give you an update on the storm that we recently experienced this weekend and really congratulate OPO and capital improvements, Mr. Bailey, for putting on a real good program where we were covered. We were covered the whole time. When I first started here, we had some storms that first winter that were pretty bad, and we had so many leaky roofs. Mm-hmm. So with the chief and everybody, we did this center that we started staffing every time a big storm would come so we could get out and help some folks. This time we really didn't have that big of a problem. We had 6 calls on Saturday night, Sunday morning during the big storm. Jeff Maggie did a great job at staffing that, along with the support staff that Mr. Bailey had provided him. So we had responses for everybody, and we were able to, you know, take care of the issues and get. And actually, staff was home, I think, by noon on Sunday, pretty much, because it cleared up. But they were able to really respond. It was incidental stuff. It's a testament that what has happened with the investment we put into that portfolio,
yep.
that you don't have leaky roofs, you don't have yep. things falling apart. We have some drainage problems. I don't know any part of really Oakland that I didn't see some drainage problems. And that was what they were addressing. But I want to really thank them for doing that. They do it very well, and they're to be commended. The Employee Association, which is not an official OHA function, but the Employee Association is having their annual Christmas gathering this Saturday, December 8th. I have 2 confirmations so far. Commissioner Castillo is going to attend, and Commissioner Negraj is going to attend. Anybody else? If you're... Okay. And you all attend? Okay. I'll make sure you have tickets. And I will not be at that event, unfortunately. But they have my full support. It's usually a lot of fun. It's over at the Waterfront Hotel. I personally just want to say, as a constituent, that I was glad they chose a place in Oakland this year rather than next door. And thank them. And thank, I think, is Shad here? No, I think he's not here. But I'll be sure to thank him. He's the head of it and putting it on this year. I wanted to give you a real brief report on MTW reporting and assessment that we did in Chicago. I was able to talk briefly in I'm going to be flying back, it looks like, early January to meet with the Assistant Secretary on that report. It's become a very hot topic in our beloved city in the world of HUD in Washington, D.C. And I was back the week before Christmas for Clough and got some time to talk to a number of folks, but including the Assistant Secretary.
Can you back up a little bit?
Yeah.
You said a week before Christmas? You meant before
Thanksgiving? Week before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And they're eager to see the report. It's in its final stages. I just finished with Anna Gwen drafting the final draft of the executive summary, and then we'll add the table, and we'll be publishing that probably in the next 3 weeks. I will share a copy with all of you just so you know, because it's work that this staff and this group did. And we really brought everyone together. 34 of the 35 agencies participated in the development of it, and the 35th agency is now involved. So it's really 100% of everyone. It addresses not only the GAO's office, who attended the conference that we organized, their report, but while I was back there, the OIG released a financial audit of HUD, and they recommended that HUD do similar stuff to what the GAO said. So it could really solve some problems for HUD, and I think they're looking at it as a solution. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy we're going to be able to get it out in front of the right people. We are also participating with NARO, FATA, and CLAFA to go to the Housing Authority Insurance Group to get additional funding to continue this so it becomes an online reporting and do an assessment of the overall MTW program next year. So that's very important work, and particularly when you're talking to folks in any of those organizations or you who are on boards in those organizations, we really need their support, and we had the conference call last week, and we're moving forward with the request, and we proofed it today, and it will go to the Housing Authority Insurance Group, who apparently has funding to do some of this work. That'll be very important to preserve this program going forward. And I was really grateful for Sunia Sutterman at CLAFA, who's their executive director, Saul, and Tim Kaiser at FADA. They all called into the call and supported us in joining this other effort for just an assessment of where we are now.
Commissioner Maine's got a question.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you were done, I didn't
want to. Oh, okay. All right. I have two more items, and then, or is it on that
one? Well, on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Are we getting any opposition? Are we getting any opposition from any of the small housing authorities as to not moving forward with MTW?
I wouldn't. There's a tension between the people who are not MTW and the people who want to be MTW, and those who are. And the tension is, we want to make sure our contractual entitlements of fungibility and what we can do under the contracts continue. We don't want to have a new MTW program that changes our agreement to where we can't do what we want to do. And that was kind of what was proposed last summer. They kept eradicating our agreements like they didn't exist and they could take away things. And our agreements are currently valid through 2018. We want that permanent, but we want it permanent with the entitlements we have in our current agreements. And that would be the bulk of the 35 MTW agencies. There are five new ones, so they're less interested in that issue because they don't have the same entitlements we have. So we want to preserve that. At the same time, part of why I think we've all coalesced is that there was some resistance, and I think you may have heard it at different conferences from folks, you know, particularly over the summer. But the only way this program is ever going to be successfully expanded with Congress is if we can, one, report on what we really do and show that to HUD, show its value. And until we can actually get that in place and HUD can be sound and the GAO's report is addressed and now the OIG report is addressed in terms of monitoring, reporting, and assessment, that's the key toward expansion. So if they're ever going to be really successful with the effort to expand the program, I really believe it's only going to be on the backs of the current agencies who can adequately tell the story. To date, we haven't really had to do that through HUD because they just have us report through these antiquated systems and only tell a portion of our story. So what the conference in Chicago focused on was developing a way you could assess us, a risk-based assessment, an on-site monitoring review that's real, that looks at files and looks at funding and looks at units, and then on targeted agencies, and then also can be aggregated up so that we can do an annual report that everyone can see and use on who we really are serving, what are the real numbers. When we get the report rolling out, we're even going to approach people who are considered the tenant advocates. You know, some of the Low Income Housing Coalition and Center for Policy and Budget, National Law Center here locally. I mean, we're going to really go meet with all of them and say, this is what we think works. I think they're going to support it. And the reason I think they're going to support it is it will get them the real information that if they really want to attack our program, they have more data to do it. But right now, it's going to try and tell what the real story is. And I think we can't be afraid of the truth. You know, and I know we're serving about 110% of the people that we're supposed to be serving. So we're way over who we really are serving under the agreement. And I want to keep that going, but I want that message not to be known just by our own congressional office, but nationally. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I would like it to be annual. I'd like us to report up into an electronic system that aggregates it annually so everyone knows the data and they can tell where we are. It's a different approach than HUD usually has used. But it's one I've been very, very forceful at trying to get moved forward because I think it's the only preservation that we have in Oakland to make sure we still have these flexibilities. And I have too many things on the line for us to not do this. And it's really the future of who we can serve and how we can serve them and how we can deal with some of the special needs populations we really need to get serious about, as well as just the ability for the agency to continue to be solvent. So
no, I am curious, Eric, that I mean, our authority here has a really strong story. Mm-hmm. Now, of the 35 agencies that are that are MTW, how deep does this success story go? Or is that a question that I really
I'm trying should? To look for a staff member to refer to. No, I think there's some outstanding agencies. I mean, I have to tell you, some people have done incredible work and continue to do incredible work, and it's not work captured by HUD. I mean, an example of that is 120 people who have been housed through our sponsor-based program, who've literally been housed from under an overpass in the MacArthur Maze into a unit. HUD has no idea in their system exists. And I think it's shameful. When we propose stuff for formerly, you know, formerly incarcerated or emancipated youth, and they publish a notice that shuts us down. I think they just, and this isn't the leadership of HUD. These are really some of the nuts and bolts staffers that don't understand what our program really is supposed to be doing. We're trying to show the world how to do things differently and demonstrate it. The other thing I told, and I think is true with our assessment, is not everything we do is going to be successful. And the world can learn a lot more from our failures, really, than our successes. And we need to be able to report that up. We tried this and it just didn't work. That's important information. But you need to be able to account for that and say why it didn't work and show the study that went on. So that individual assessment and how we reach common definitions of self-sufficiency and things, we have a whole definition table in this report that the working staff, the people throughout this country who are really the best MTW authorities there are the people who came up with how to evaluate it. Part of the lecturing during the calls was to make sure everyone didn't just try and tweak this so they wouldn't automatically always be a high, you know, successful performing agency. That wasn't the goal. It's trying to tell the real story so that we can all learn from it. You know, the point of our flexibility is to be a demonstration program to try to do things differently and better. What works in Oakland may work in a number of other cities, but not all cities. We need to be able to say what works and what doesn't and why, to be able to share that. The MOMS program would be an example of something that we've had now that we've tweaked and tweaked and tweaked over the years and grown and evolved. And we now have some answers that nobody else in the country is doing. So we have New York fly out to meet with us just to find out how can you do this? How can you make this, you know, expand this in New York where they're having that times, you know, the New York scale.
Now, I am curious, Eric, but is it possible or worthwhile to try to get the cities to support this effort? Because, you know, I'm just thinking of if you look at the success that Oakland Housing Authority has had here in Oakland, it is becoming now quite visible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Housing Authority here has won a lot of friends that it didn't have before. And so it just seems to me, you know, because this is a government agency and people that are elected oversee it. So I'm just wondering if we might not be able to bring a little extra pressure, because especially here, it's really MTW that has allowed the Housing Authority to do what it's done so that they've been able to fix up the properties.
But it's even beyond fixing up the properties, you know.
And serve more people.
Yeah. And serve more people and
do
it more effectively.
And add more programs that add more value.
I mean, the key to us with MTW is that we're able to have an outstanding police department that does community-based policing and investigations that are making our community safer and better, not just for our residents and us, but for those people who live around us. Mm-hmm. It's that we have a family and community partnerships department that's funded and that can go out and make the connections we need to make, and a partnership with OUSD that's hoping to improve the schools in a way that makes it a city for families, to raise families in again. And those things are so important for us, but they're also important for other people who aren't MTW. I could name, and I won't, cities that are in similar predicaments. Those things also dramatically impact leasability. So how you look at these programs and as a demonstration for us, there are certain cities that could learn a lot from us. There's others that really won't learn anything from us, but then they might learn from San Mateo across the way, you know, a more suburban kind of environment. In terms of our city, it's more important that the Congress support this. They're the ones who take any final actions. Barbara Lee has been very supportive, both of us and of this initiative, and she understands it. Both our Congress people in California understand it. Gary Miller in San Bernardino, a Republican, is the one who proposed it, and we coordinated all the MTW agencies in California during the ASEA discussions last summer to make sure our legislators knew, and particularly Gary Miller was very helpful. And making sure we preserve what works for Oakland. And I think it's really important that it stay local. And the point is, at what point can the city's advocates help us?
Yeah.
They certainly, we have a strong relationship with the folks in the city that are willing to, and they understand what we're doing more than ever. We have the mayor, I think, is very supportive, and we use their lobbyists to help if we need it. But I think most important for us is to get a national conversation. So we have people who are at the Lawrence Douglas Housing Authority in Kansas as active with their representative as we are with ours to make sure they understand the program and know what's going on. I can't have, you know, you can have a conversation with the Congress office, particularly Barbara Lee's office, they know what we're doing. They've toured our sites. But most Congress people haven't done that. They don't see the difference, you know? And so when people say something to their office about MTW, they know what it means for their district. They know what it means for our residents. And we just need to get all the other housing authorities doing that. So I don't know if it answers your question. The city's involvement could be beneficial if it comes down to something. Right now, it's all up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at it as things get squirrely. I mean, how do we really get this done? And it seems that that might be one way of putting it over the edge. I think that Commissioner Nagaraj has a question.
Yeah, I recall that one of, so to the extent there's any updates or you know anything about the issue of kind of accounting treatment and reserves and how we show them and they're reflected. I don't know if we've made enough progress on that for you to update, but to the extent that we have.
We have a whole proposal on finance.
Fantastic.
Yep, it's a whole section on how we count, what we count obligated and committed, and the team, which Tony Ma, before he left, was our representative on, and he stayed on here just to finish up this work before he left us and went to Chicago. But we were able to find a Gatsby circular, the OMB circular, like 187 that we hear about, that defines those terms. It's not a HUD-directed circular. It's broader than that. And we think HUD can hang their hat on it, and nobody will debate it. So when we found that, and everybody got behind, that's a good definition. I think it's a great solution for HUD. And those are the things they'll see when they see the report. But, yeah, we have it very, very tightly mapped out of how we can report your actions accurately and know what is our real unobligated reserve amounts.
Cool.
Uncommitted and obligated.
Oh, Commissioner Hurd.
Yeah, I just want to add a comment.
I was wondering about even getting the supervisors involved. Some of them are
in Oakland. If it comes to a political
Oakland
fight, I think it's worth everybody who's got any guns in Oakland getting involved.
Yeah.
Don't say guns.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyone who's got clout definitely will help, and those are definitely people with clout. Right, and I think the more we do with them, the more they'll understand. Yeah. You know, we've been proposing the Emancipated Foster Youth. I'm going to meet just on a kind of general meeting about first place to see what else we got going on in the interim.
Okay.
And, you know, Wilma Chan was very key in getting all that pulled together for us. So I think as they see what we can do with it, their support will go deeper.
Wonderful.
Yeah. The last two items I have is the OHAPD and Oakland Police Department MOU, that includes ShopSpotter, but the MOU is going to go to the City Council tomorrow night, so I will
Holy
just be there.
Cow.
It passed the Public Safety Committee a week ago. Chief was there.
That's pathbreaking.
First time in 10 years we've gotten it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
And I just want to really congratulate the chief and his staff, and Paul Malik's here for him. He couldn't be with us tonight, on moving that forward. So I'll be there. You're going to be there tomorrow, right, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and Patricia and I will be there. And we won't. It's on consent. We just want to show up.
Nice work, folks.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the last thing, the CAHI, Project-Based Contract Administration Contract. We did have a CAHI meeting this morning, and I briefed them briefly on what was going on. So we have extended the contract. We have 2 years worth of 90-day extensions on our current contract. And at about 9:30 this morning, they sent an email out announcing that they were going to publish the awardees from the most recent NOFA process. This came as a big shock across the whole country who do these contracts, because OMB had instructed them to go back and do it correct.
GAO.
Had instructed them to go back and do it under
procurement. They did a NOFA as opposed to a procurement.
So they wanted to issue an RFP.
Mm-hmm. HUD. Sorry, what's the difference?
A NOFA is a notice for funding availability, like a grant award. A request for proposals is a competitive solicitation for services. GAO found they had to do the second one, not the first one. Direct contradiction to that report are proceeding to award the NOFA. Now, I don't ever remember this happening, but I'm not the expert, and we have engaged, Goldfarb's been helping us with, what's the other firm?
Richard. Roberts. O'Donnell.
O'Donnell.
Richard
O'Donnell.
Joseph O'Donnell. I can't remember, but it's Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah,
Neil O'Donnell.
Have been advising us. And we do have plenty. The CAHI board has awarded plenty of authority still left from the last action to pursue anything. But it looks like we are going to be filing a complaint in where?
The Federal Court of Claims.
The Federal Court of Claims about moving forward. And the difference is that by filing there, they can force HUD to do the correct thing. Apparently, when the GAO makes their recommendation, it's only a recommendation. And this could, we understand that many other housing authorities are going to do similar, or the people who administer the project-based contracts are going to do similar actions. So we'll be filing that. I still believe it's a long way off until we get to a solution for this problem.
The law firm is Rogers, Joseph, and O'Donnell.
Oh, thank you. And Neil O'Donnell's been very helpful. He represents a number of contract-based project administrators throughout the country. And so we are only paying a portion of whatever we do. And that's all. I'm here for any questions.
So, thank you. Have they determined who they're awarding it to?
You would presume, because they're supposed to make the announcement a week from Friday. I don't understand why they sent an email out telling us they were going to make the announcement and not just make the announcement, and I will allow anyone to speculate privately on that. I think it's a matter of chess at this point with what they're doing with the different contractors, and all I know is I'm just trying to make sure we preserve our interests.
I mean, we might be shooting ourselves in the foot.
No. Yes. If we were got the award, you're saying, and then why wouldn't... The challenge is if nobody filed it in California, or if we didn't file it, and then they awarded it to somebody else, and we could lose the contract and not have the defense. So in order to stay in the game, it's kind of the pay or play deal. I believe that the other, at least one other agency in California, is going to file, and that we'll both be in the game.
Gotcha.
And, you know, also... we think that it's very, very likely that the suit in the Federal Court of Claims, which is basically to get a temporary restraining order against the award, will win. So even if they were planning to award it to Cahi, Neil is an extremely experienced government contract specialist. And when we brought him in, he knew all the other players and everything, and he would be very surprised if this lawsuit lost. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Thank you.
And that's all my report.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Great.
I have a question, Eric. I was just as I was looking through this, a couple things caught my eye, and one of which was the volume of incoming calls into customer service.
We had a wait list opening, I think, during part of this period, and that always generates a residual amount of calls of where I see.
Yeah. So it's kind of a carryover from that.
And we've also been pulling an enormous amount of people. We have 1,200 pulled off the 2011 wait list.
Okay,
we're calling people. So that just generates a lot of business for us.
Yeah. I see. Because I just looked at that and said, boy, that's an awful lot of phone calls coming in. I mean, that's over 100. That's almost 140,000.
I want to also just thank, and Michelle's here, and also Lenita, who both worked on this at different times of taking over the opening of the wait list and getting the eligibility done for that. I'm pushing them real hard, but they're doing a great job, and I really appreciate their support. They're the one dealing with all those calls.
I say, well, yes. I say hats off to that entire team, because that really did catch my eye, because that's a heck of a lot of calls. And then the other question I had was, we had a report. You have on page 14, the legal division report. It was all OHA-managed properties.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any data for non-OHA-managed properties?
We can get that. We don't routinely keep that, so we would have to request it from the contractors.
But we can
talk about doing that. Is Anna's here? Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, someone does look at that, right?
Oh, yeah. Anna Kadanovskaya, our director of asset management, works that.
I just want to make sure that, I mean, it's not in the report. I just make sure that, okay, it doesn't mean we're not looking at it. Okay, good.
Yeah, we just don't routinely roll it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see, where are we now? I've lost my...
We're on reports of commission and committees. Commission committees.
Oh, reports for committees. Yeah, I lost my agenda here. It got sucked up into the pile of moving things here. what's this? Oh, yeah, there we go. Good. Okay, do we have any reports from commission committees?
No, the education committee meeting is in January.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have it before the next board meeting.
Okay.
Development committee meeting. Development committee, development policy committee, right?
Yes.
Development policy committee. We are likely early next year, going to roll out kind of a draft policy for public comment, and incorporate that public comment, and then re-release an updated draft. Can you say that again?
Yeah, the committee's been drafting it. It's gone through its, I think, close to final draft reiteration, and we're going to meet with a couple other individuals to get some feedback before we publish it, and then we'll probably the committee will hold a public hearing here just to take any input from some of the nonprofit providers and developers that want to, and then it'll come before the board as the final policy. But I think we've made real progress. I mean, I was very pleased with the last bit, and I think it's concise, meaningful, and it'll get some of the projects we want bubbling up, and send the right message. So that may happen in January. Both those things, yeah.
Okay. Do we have any announcements by commissioners? Hearing none, next item, believe it or not, is adjournment.
Before we formally adjourn, I just want to say we got to establish a budget committee between now and the next meeting, so I'll work with the chair on doing that.
Okay.
Because we're going to start meetings probably by February, if not late January.
Okay.
Right?
Very good.
Good job.
We need a motion to adjourn, or we just...
Yeah, you can do that.
I'll move.
Move? Second? Okay. We're good. We're official. We have legally adjourned. Nice job, team.
Peace out.